Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
Shit up. That was Guerrilla Radio. Rage Against the Machine, man. That was tight, tight, tight. And welcome, everybody. This is Andrew Fetter. Welcome to When Pigs Fly. And I want to thank you all for listening, and future listeners, past listeners, and in-between listeners. Thank you for listening in. And I can't believe I'm going on almost 7 years on BBS Radio. God, it's been a long time, hasn't it? Anyway, I want everyone to know, I know my last show I had on was with Carrie Fezza. I was astounding and very fascinating show we had last week. For those who haven't listened to it, please do check it out on the archive. There was a lot of information. She was doing an analysis. She's, of course, an esteemed astrologist as well as intuitive. Please check that show out as well as check out her website at zodiacbuzz.com. And it's now an archive. I also have a special announcement, as you might see, BBS Radio. Of course, they think they posted a wrong date, but that's okay. I have an extraordinary good friend. You've probably heard of him. He's going to be on July 26th. He's now on tour with his group. I think you may have heard of him. A guy who, you know, he's been on a couple times on the show and a lot of shows around the country. He's done a lot of great speech engagements, but he's probably more well-known for two really great movies called Chromatica and, of course, Esoteric Agenda, and his third was Ungrip, which also is extremely well done. Of course, I'm talking about Ben Stewart, the filmmaker. He will be on my show exclusively on the 26th of July, and he's on tour right now with his music group. He's heading into L.A., I know for a fact, because I'm going to one of his shows. His group is called Harrisonic. That's H-I-E-R-O-S-O-N-I-C, Harrisonic. And he's going to be playing at the Viper Room on July 23rd. That's the one I'm going to. And then August 2nd at L.A.'s famed Whiskey A Go-Go, he's going to be there too. And he'll, further updates, he'll be on his way. If you check out or go on to his just Google it or Harrisonic onto Facebook, you'll see where they're heading along. Maybe they're heading in your city. Really great group. And I'm telling you, really good music. Music that is very modern, very tight, very alternative, but also has a good deep message in our times, which is extraordinarily what we need. It reminds me of sort of like, you know, when music back in the 60s and 70s had a message behind it, that's like one of his. It's like Rage Against the Machine I just put out has a message behind their music. This is the political statement, not just political, but spiritual. I really just check him out anyway. Enough of that. And do circle that date. He will be on my show on the 26th, not the 29th of June. And then July 26th. All right, now, a lot of things are happening right now. Before I get into them, the immigration bill has passed, of course, in the Senate for those in the United States. I guess with some compromise, which is long overdue, changing the, whether you call them illegal, which technically they are legal immigrants, or undocumented, which I always find a funny term, because undocumented, I mean, kind of being an undocumented driver, you know. But nonetheless, it is sort of a problem in the United States. It's a situation that needs to be taken care of. My found belief system is that the United States is a nation of immigrants, and we have an extraordinary amount of people who did come out here, whatever means they did. We have had a long time ago a means for them to come on back in the days in the 70s, and for some reason it got obstructed, to set a circumstance for people who have emigrated here, no matter what place they're for, and we cannot be biased because they have brown skin and happen to speak Spanish. That is absolutely disgusting. Anyway, we have approximately 12 million immigrants here who are not documented. If this immigration bill were to be passed and put through, it would substantially change our economic situation in the United States, both in the parameters of not just taxes, but it would also raise wages directly. This is, by the way, there's major points of economics about the immigration bill. If it would pass, it would certainly change the United States way over beyond in its own path of bringing its own economic means. It also changed the taxes and a lot of other situations in the United States dramatically. So those who are out there, do push this out. Contact your congressman right now. Especially, we were having obstructions with the GOP for stupid reasons or for their own bigoted reasons. Of course, we actually have security on borders, but we have to put these immigrants on the path to some kind of legal status to me and allow a process. Yes, they may be on the back of the line, but let's put them in line is the main course. And those who have done service for our United States government, who fought inside on in a war or put the clothes of being a soldier, they should be immediately put in the front of the line, because any person who's sticking their names and their bodies in front and path of arms way obviously should be well received or more rewarded for that. Anyway, not to go on tangent, just something I saw today, what was going on in obstruction in the House over the immigration bill. But today, as I was talking about Guerrilla Radio, the reason why I put that on there too, because I always have a theme for some reason, is because I want to know if you can all hear me out there. The reason why, if you can't, well, I believe the NSA is, and they always have, not just listening to me, but listening to everyone. Now you're wondering, so what? What? But they're listening to me. What if the NSA is listening? What does this have to do with little bitty old me? Well, in recent situations that have occurred, we all know or may have not heard, if you haven't heard already, please inform yourself, but about Snowden exposing issues with Snowden. So what does Snowden have to do with you and me? Well, here you go. About the NSA and the recent things that involve exposing the eavesdropping. Well, this has not just been the NSA, of course. we've had just recent things coming out within the United States alone, with recently with the Justice Department eavesdropping, actually going through emails of the Associated Press. We know over in the UK they've been having issues where News Corp and the government's been going through people's emails that came out. Of course, we have one of the guys who was out there who's now somehow technically out criminal working for CNN. Anyway, but what does all this mean to you? Now, it means a lot. It means that we put in our process of thinking, allowing a system of eavesdropping and surveillance systems, thinking we're helping protect us, when that is sort of an excuse. Now, Ben Franklin once said that they that can give up an essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither safety nor liberty. You think about what he had said. A lot of it is amazing how our forefathers, Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and et al., Madison, and all them, they said a lot of things that still carry on today. It's amazing. And what he was talking about was real simple. We often try to think to protect ourselves and look for security, some kind of security blanket. And when we do that temporary security, we often lose it. We lose our just both our liberty, and then we also are not that much more safer. Here's what Rockefeller, and this is why you need to think for yourself, why these measures that were put in place, these listening systems, these excuses for security. Now, it could be used, but there needs to be, if you're having security, you should have oversight. But think about, like, when I watch CNN on the news, in fact, I was just talking to my producer about stuff we watch. I mean, I watch CNN and I watch MSNBC, and it's very rarely I do watch Fox, but I do some every now and then. But I'll watch and read news. I even read Huffington Post. I read CNN. I see New York Times. I watch Al Jazeera, BBC News. The reason why I look at all those general media outlets, including The Guardian and et al., is because they tell you where they're heading at. They're literally trying, they're throwing in the paper. If you read behind the lines, they're like advertisements. They're trying to convince you of things that make you think a certain way, and you have to think about why they're doing it. And here's a famous statement that was given out by David Rockefeller back in June of 1991. He has said, and I quote you, for his words, David Rockefeller said, "We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, and Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings, and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the work is now much more sophisticated and prepared to mark towards a world government, the supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in past centuries." This is what he said. So I want you to think for yourself. Think. Because Einstein had said, "I fear the day of technology will surpass our human interaction. The world will have a generation of idiots." So tell me, it won't be tech that gets us smarter. It's only us that will make us more educated. So, what is it all about? For those, I'll talk a little bit for information, for educating ourselves on what our Fourth Amendment. But for those outside the United States, it does apply to you. Yes, it is our own Bill of Rights. And if you don't have one, you should get one. I'm going to start reading off what the Bill of Rights are, just a couple of them, and what their meanings behind how important they are, because they all interrelate, especially the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth, Fifth, but they all interact. Now, think about what I'm about to say. It does apply not just to the United States, but worldwide. There was a gentleman named Craig Biddle, and he said something pretty profound. And this has to do with the questionings and mergers of between religion and free speech. And you have to think of why the usage of religion is being used to subjugate free speech. Think about it. This is not the first time. This happened back in times of the Vatican. When the Vatican controlled most of Europe. The same thing is being held within Lebanon, but it's still happening within Muslim countries, but it's still happening within Europe, being brought under the apparatus of being politically correct. So Craig Biddle said something that was quite fascinating, and this does very much apply to free speech and the right of free speech, which people outside the United States may not understand, but I'm trying to reemphasize so you do understand. We are in an intellectual battle against religion, at home and abroad, to maintain freedom of speech. There is no middle ground here. Either religion is valid or we have the right to speak our minds. We can lose certain liberties, as we tragically have been doing and continue to do so, yet still work peacefully toward resecuring them, so long as we can say what we think. But to lose freedom of speech would be to lose liberty as such. If we are not free to criticize religion or offend a god, then we are not free. We are by that fact fully under the rule of religion. You can do or say anything except what offends God is the law of theocracy. That is the rule by men who embrace faith, thus reject reason. There was a time when Westerners were able to criticize religion or even offend God for fear of punishment or death. This time, it was called the Dark Ages. To lose our freedom of speech, or to speak freely within our minds, would be the end of a peaceful civilization and the beginning of a new darker age, one in which the church would have it at its disposal highly advanced eavesdropping technology, not to mention modern weaponry. The tenets of religion are incompatible with the right to free speech. The only way to mix the two in one's mind is to take neither of them seriously. But not to taking religion seriously does not change what religion is, or says, or means. And not to take freedom of speech seriously does not alter the fact that it is a fundamental requirement of human life. The right of free speech is a recognition of the fact that in order for people to live together peacefully, they must be free to express their thoughts, regardless of what others think, feel, or just believe. We need freedom of expression to establish and maintain it. We must repudiate religion and embrace the rational foundations for our rights. If we fail to challenge the growing threat to freedom of speech at the most fundamental level, we will lose the freedom to express our ideas, which means we will lose our ability to live as civilized human beings. In order to disarm those who attack the right to free speech, we must identify religion, all religion, as what it is: illogical, invalid, inhuman, immoral. Thus, for those out there who don't have one, you should get one. It's called the First Amendment. And it says, in our First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting or establishing of a religion. Meaning, any country out there that has or validates as a preface in Sharia or any law that has a premise for its foundation or recognizing as is Islamic of Iran or whatever, or any other religion will never have free speech. Congress, in our First Amendment, shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, that includes Christianity, or prohibiting the free speech, again, or Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free speech thereof, or abridging the free speech of thereof, or the press, or the right of the people to peacefully assemble, meaning protest, they can protest, and to petition the government for against grievances. That is our right. That is what every single country has to have in order to have a real democratic republic. Now, that's really a good one to have, but it needs some protection. So there's one that we have here in the United States, and happens to be called the Second Amendment. And what does the Second Amendment say? It says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, what was that to do? Now, people may have heard and recently about, you know, we need gun control and that. There's a reason why you'll hear a plethora of BS, bullshit crap, pushed down people's throat for gun control. And it's pushed by and brainwashed to make you so you cannot protect your freedom of speech. Eventually, the government and people who are in power can impose what you can do on you. That's how it works. And here in the United States, we have a thing called the Internal Revenue Service, where there is actually no real laws of that have been fined, but they can literally go manhandle you, throw you in jail without a due process, a real due process. And that is for real. People are intimidated by it, but that's the truth. That's why we have guns in the United States. It is not for hunting. It is not for going protecting yourself in your house. It's not for target practice. It is a barrier. In fact, a guy who wrote it, a little guy named Thomas Jefferson, wrote into Colonel Smith back in 1913, November 13th of 1787, the explanations of what is and the importance of the Second Amendment. He said, and this applies to everyone around the world, when a country can preserve its liberties, if its rulers are not warned from time to time that this people preserve the spirit of resistance, let them take arms. The remedy is to set them right as to facts, pardon and pacify them. What significantly is a few lives lost in a century or two? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is nature's natural manure. He was referring to sometimes the government, there has to be some type of counteraction to the government. This is actual history. He is stating what is in real terms. So when you look at the intention of what gun control is, then you see what control lies. It is only a form to limit the power of the people against the governments. Another famous person, you may have heard of him, it happens to be James Madison. He once said, this again regarding the same issue of gun control and what the Second Amendment is, Americans have the right and advantage of being armed, unlike citizens of other countries who governments are afraid to trust people with arms. So he was speaking that because the Americans have guns, they have that protection. This allows for the Second Amendment. It actually allows for a sort of a barrier against the government. The government is not the friend of the people. It is actually its enemy. Now, which leads us to the Fourth Amendment. Now, what does the Fourth Amendment say? And you can realize all these amendments are not to for the governments, for the protection of the people against the government. See, these forefathers of ours thought way ahead. They realized that the government is not your buddy in the long run. It's a necessary evil kind of thing. So they put these rules and regulations to sort of protect the people. And here on the Fourth Amendment is another one. The right of the people to be secure in their persons and houses and papers and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause and supported by the oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons and things to be seized. Now, you'll hear again and again, unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause. So now you're going to ask yourself, how can the NSA spy on you without getting a warrant? Well, they did this back in 1978. And this was changed after, of course, Watergate. What happened in history, just to go back in history of time, we had from the FBI spying on its own citizens numerous times. We had the CIA spying on its own citizens. We had a plethora of government agencies violating our own Fourth Amendment. Of course, nothing was done to them, right? That's the joke of it. So they decided, but we need some sort of surveillance because technology or whatnot to protect us against any, you know, there was an issue of Soviet and Chinese, Communist China, but more Soviet. Everybody's looking at the Soviets. Or foreign threat to the United States. So they figured we'd place this thing called FISA. And what was it? The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And it was designed in 1978. And you can look this up on Wikipedia or whatever. It basically, and this is just giving you a preface, the act is a United States law which prescribes procedures for the physical and electronical surveillance and the collection of foreign intelligence information between foreign powers and agents of foreign powers, which may include American citizens and permanent residents suspected of espionage or terrorism. So, it allowed them even to spy on Americans who they think. So, but with this, how it works is FISA, which is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, to set up a system. You would have, they have a special court, secret court kind of thing, where you have to trust the court, of course. And the court would go, they'd run up and go, okay, we need to spy on blah, blah, blah. Well, instead of going through the whole procedure, it's done really quickly. And sometimes they can actually prorate, like they can actually spy on somebody and listen to them and then go back and go, hey, to the court, we had to go spy on them. This was because you can't, let's say something necessary, somebody's flying a bomb to blow up a harbor or 9/11 or whatever, it would have allowed them to spy ahead of time. Now, we did have this in place, by the way. So they actually had the surveillance, and they actually had all the stuff. I don't want to get on the 9/11 stuff, because we know how that was all bullshit. But it was all set up. But to scare the public, and of course this was later amended by the Patriot Act, and the Patriot Act basically implemented an amended amount per part of this. And the Patriot Act, of course, was implemented after 9/11. And what it did, and I'm reading an article, it's Title II, is titled the Enhanced Surveillance Procedures. This is within the Patriot Act. I don't read the whole thing. This is just the part of surveillance procedures. So it's titled Enhanced Surveillance Procedures and covers all aspects of surveillance of suspected terrorists and those suspected of engaging in computer fraud or abuse or an agent of a foreign power who are engaged in clandestine activities. It is primarily made of amendments to the FISA and the ECPA, which is another system, many of the most controversial aspects of which are withheld within the Patriot Act. And you can all read this. In particular, the little title sales gives government agencies ability to gather foreign intelligence information from U.S. and non-U.S. citizens alike and change FISA to make gaining foreign intelligence a significant purpose of FISA's base in its surveillance, where previously it was only primary purpose. So basically, it changed its definition. Was meant to remove a legal wall between the criminal investigations and the surveillance for the purpose of gathering foreign intelligence, which hampered, by the way, the investigations when criminal and foreign surveillance were overlapped. So it was basically to supposedly to remove that. However, this wall even existed, like I said, under the Federal Surveillance Court review to have actually been long held misinterpretation by the government agencies. So it was sort of removing that sort of barrier, that wall. They made it so, you know, they can just go ahead and do it without sometimes going to FISA. And that was the issue. So you have in a system without going to court where they can just do this. So they basically had a surveillance target under FISA of, let's say, a non-US citizen or an agent of the foreign power, though it did not require that any investigation might not have been undertaken on the citizens or who are carrying out activities protected under the First Amendment. The title explains exactly under this, the duration of the FISA physical search and surveillance orders, and gave the ability to, by the way, share information gathered before with a federal jury and other agencies. So this allowed this to persist. This was what the key factor was. It opened up the Pandora's box. It made it easier for it removed more walls of oversight under the aspects of security. Again, there was no oversight. So what happens? Then you have you have in place the national security system, and the national security agency itself is very unique. Most people don't even know what the hell it is. They're like, what is the national security agency? What is that with different from CIA? It is actually probably more highly sophisticated and more encrypted, holding a lot more power than even the NSA. If you ever watched the movie called the Enemy of the State or something like that. It was Gene Hackman and I forget his other name. Anyway, and it's basically about this guy who's just a lawyer and I forget, and he gets caught up in a wave of being eavesdropped and they're watching him, and there's some agency and it works for the NSA, and they catch one of the NSA guys killing a senator, and there's a tape involved. Well, that basically shows how the power, and it's actually real, what that show was. I can't remember the name of it, I apologize, but it definitely it has implications of what that is. Will Smith, I apologize. Now I remember, had to Google out real quick. Anyway, getting back to what the NSA is. The National Security Agent is a cryptologic intelligence agency of the United States Department of Defense, and it is responsible for collecting analysis of foreign communications and foreign signals intelligence, as well as protecting the United States government's communications and information systems, which involves information security and crypto analysis cryptology. The NSA is directed by at least a lieutenant general or the vice admiral. The NSA is the key component of the U.S. intelligence community, which is headed by the Director of National Intelligence. The Central Security Service is a co-located agency created to coordinate intelligence acting and cooperate between the NSA and other U.S. military cryptanalogist agencies. The Director of the National Security serves as the commander of the United States Cyber Command and Chief. By law, the NSA's intelligence is limited to foreign communications, although they have been sometimes instances involving domestic collection, including the NSA wireless surveillance controversy that we're talking about. Now, we've had in the past, like I said, wiretapping on Americans. Has that something new? We know the FBI did this to even MLK. We even know this was done to even our own president, like John F. Kennedy. Hoover did this. We even know the FBI had surveyed John Lennon from the get-go. But the NSA has been doing this ever since the Cold War to Americans. Not just to Americans, this is a collateral between a lot of the agencies around the world. The United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, and Australia and New Zealand all have within their midst a collusion of NSA. So when I'm talking NSA, now we're talking a global agencies with agencies. You see, there's a thing called Ashkelon. And in 1947, it resulted in the UK-USA treaty signed by the governments of all, including the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. The purpose of the UK-USA agreement was to create a single vast global intelligence organization sharing common goals and common agenda, spying on the world and shared data. This is, in fact, what's been going on. In fact, it was in London Telegraph and in the December of 1997 that it disclosed that NSA is the world's biggest and most powerful signal intelligence organization, received approval to set up a network of spy stations throughout Britain. Their role was to provide military, diplomatic, and economic intelligence by intercepting communications from throughout the Northern Hemisphere. It is well known that the NSA is one of the shadows. Now, I'm reading this from the article. The NSA is one of the shadows of the United States intelligence agencies until a few years ago. Its existence was a secret, and its charter and any mention of its dues were still classified. However, it does now have its own website, in place you can go, NSA.gov, in which it can describe itself being responsible for the signals, intelligence, agency, security, and activities of the United States government. That was then. So what did Snowden tell us that got the NSA along with the Obama and most of the Congress freak out about? What Snowden did was tell the truth. He blew the whistle on the whole scam of the operation of the NSA, along with the Patriot Act, that the main goal was used to use as an excuse to spy for so-called security reasons. There might have been one out of 100. Yeah, they found, discovered, stopped some terrorist activity or some bombing or threat to the United States. But that's it. Let's do 5 over here and 100 over here. But in fact, what are they really doing? The fact is they're spying on all of us. We all being spied upon. We are all being listened upon. Every single thing you talk on the phone, everything that you type in your computer, send on an email, it is now databased into the NSA. Everything. You think it isn't? It is. And the more serious thing is what can be done after the fact. Fact is, this may sound so futuristic, crazy, but they can do recrypt and manufacture what you put down and change a word here and there and make it look like you said that. Yes, they can actually retranslate and rechange your emails. They can rechange your phone calls. They have this ability. We've had this ability for almost 20 years. They do it all the time when you make a movie. So think about it. All the things you saw in movies, they're for real now. They've been for real. That's where they got these ideas from. So what's next with this Big Brother? Well, it's obviously now what they're going to do with Snowden. I mean, what would you do if you were the government? And now Snowden is exposing them for who they are. Make him the messenger? No, hell, they're going to use diversion and make him the villain. Make him the bad guy. Make him the traitor. Make him the spy. Make him the guilty one. But they're going to certainly brush under the rug the whole idea that there's absolutely no one over, there's no oversight on who they are spying on or for what or why they're taking in this information. And you may think it's nothing, but it really is. Like I said, let's say they're spying you, and they know this for years from now, and they take your emails and your Facebook stuff and your phone calls. Like I said, they can sit there and turn around. They don't like what you say, or they can fabricate and then call you a traitor and recreate what you are and get rid of you. Sounds crazy? It isn't. You may have seen the movie like Bourne Identity. It is for real. They can literally do this. This is not conspiracy nonsense. This is for real. This isn't made up crap. This is for real. This affects you. It affects what I was just telling you about your freedom of speech, your right to bear arms. When you go and think about your economical situation, how bad it is, this has the very foundation of it. You want to question why you pay taxes? No, shut up. Pay your taxes. You want to shut up? You get back in line and work your butt off. Make less for work more. If you have no problem being the slave to this system, if you have no problem just shutting up and being nothing, if you want to feel to be nothing but a hamster on a wheel, then yes, be that hamster. But if you're a human being that can think, then think why all these systems are in place. Think why all this is. This has to do with us, our choices. It is for real. So, like, again, look what they're trying to do with Snowden. You know, they did it to when WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange disclosed all the cables and literally made a joke of all the diplomats, including the Clintons and everybody in life across the world. So he left nobody. Everybody was naked, right? And what did they do to him? They fabricated him into being a sexual predator. They fabricated it. I mean, why didn't they go after him a long time and say he was a sexual predator? No, they didn't, because it's all bullshit. It is total bullshit. Anybody with a normal brain knows that. So what did they do? They attacked him. They couldn't capture him, so they made him a criminal. Look what they're trying to do with Snowden. He's basically jumping up. Okay, he has a material that's going to fight. What did it embarrass between what's going on between the spying between the Russia and China and other countries? Yeah, come on, man. They all know they spy on each other. They all know they listen to each other. That's all. You're fed upon. I was listening on CNN. That was total bullshit. That they're all worried about their spying on us. That's going to blow any agreements we have. Bullshit. They already know they do to each other. Believe me, there's no more than what they know than they talk about. They're not stupid. They can't be fed with such naive bullshit. But right now they're doing a diversion. They don't want to get to the crux. You know, they're playing, oh, where's Waldo? Where's Snowden now? He's in Russia. But they never, you don't hear them talking about the issue. You know, they only talk about Snowden. He dropped out of school and has no real education. So what? Einstein dropped out of school. Look at him. You'll see they're constantly attacking the character of the messenger. To do what? To divert the message. They don't want you to keep on talking about the NSA and the surveillance. They don't want you to talk about what's going on, how the Justice Department was doing illegal surveillance on the Associated Press. So who is this guy? This Edward Joseph Snowden, born June 21st, 1983. All he was is a technical contractor for the NSA and the Central Intelligence Agency, who happened to leak details of the top secret American and British mass surveillance programs to the press. Individuals occupying those positions may have been required to obtain a top secret information clearance, which requires a special background investigation. So what did Snowden do? He was subjected to drug testing and required and took several polygraph tests and so on. But what he disclosed after what he does, as imagine what he did. He's just a guy who works for them as a contracting service. So basically he wasn't a direct employee, he was contractor. I mean, it was basically the same. You know, so he was working primary with them. So then what did he do? He contacted and was working with a person named Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian in London, which was published the series exposés based upon Snowden's disclosures in June of 2013. And what Snowden revealed was information about a security of classified intelligence, including the interception of U.S. and European metadata and the PRISM and Tempora internet surveillance programs. Snowden said that the leaks were in effect to inform the public as to what is being done in their name and what that is done against them. On June 13th, the U.S. federal prosecutor filed a sealed complaint made public on June 21st, charging Snowden with theft of government property, unauthorized communication of national defense, willful communication of classified intelligence to unauthorized persons. Two latter allegations fell under the Espionage Act. So Snowden's leaks are said to rank amongst the most significant breaches in history of the U.S. NSA. Matthew M. Haidt, an intelligence historian in Washington, said disclosures linked to Snowden have confirmed longstanding suspicions that the NSA's surveillance in this country is far more than what we knew about. So here's the facts. Snowden first made contact with documentary filmmaker Loris Boitras in January 2013. According to Boitras, Snowden chose to contact her and seeing her report on William Binney, an NSA whistleblower, in the New York Times. She is also the member of the Freedom of Press Foundation, along with Glenn Greenwald. Greenwald, reporting for The Guardian, said he had been working with Snowden since February. Martin was writing within the Washington Post, says he first made contact was back in May 16th. So you see they had contacts going back, and it was going back and forth. So Galvin was told that Snowden, we wouldn't like to make any guarantee about what we publish. So Snowden repeatedly regretted what we weren't able to keep this project unilateral. So shortly after he made contact with Glennon of the paper with The Guardian, Snowden communicated using his encrypted email, Verex, meaning truth teller in Latin, and asked not to be quoted at any length for fear of identification of his synonyms. According to Gelman, prior to the first meetings, Snowden wrote, "I prefer understanding that I will be made to suffer for my actions, that the return of this information to the public marks my end." So he knew what was about to happen. So he disclosed it anyway. Yet they call him a villain. Simple figure. The United States intelligence of whom he's Golden said, "Will certainly kill you if they think you're a single point of failure. They could stop this disclosure and make them the sole owner of this information." Snowden has described his CIA experience as formative, stating that the CIA deliberately got a Swiss banker drunk and encouraged him to drive alone. When the latter was arrested, a CIA operative offered to intervene. Later recruited the banker. The Swiss bank UA commented, "It does not seem to me that it is likely that this incident played out as well by Snowden or the media." I mean, that's the material, but there's a lot of information that you can read, and this is in The Guardian itself. But I'd rather have you hear from himself, in his own words, what he said to them. And it's about 10 minutes long, so we're going to go over a little bit. I'm searching.
My name is Ed Snowden. I'm 29 years old. I work for Booz Allen Hamilton as an infrastructure analyst for NSA in Hawaii.
What are some of the positions that you held previously within the intelligence community?
I've been a systems engineer, systems administrator, senior advisor for the Central Intelligence Agency, solutions consultant, and a telecommunications information systems officer.
One of the things people are going to be most interested in trying to understand who you are and what you're thinking is there came some point in time when you crossed this line of thinking about being a whistleblower to making the choice to actually become a whistleblower. Walk people through that decision-making process.
When you're in positions of privileged access, like a systems administrator for these sort of intelligence community agencies, you're exposed to a lot more information on a broader scale than the average employee. And because of that, you see things that may be disturbing. But over the course of a normal person's career, you'd only see one or two of these instances. When you see everything, you see them on a more frequent basis. And you recognize that some of these things are actually abuses. And when you talk to people about them in a place like this, where this is the normal state of business, people tend not to take them very seriously and, you know, move on from them. But over time, that awareness of wrongdoing sort of builds up, and you feel compelled to talk about it. And the more you talk about it, the more you're ignored, the more you're told it's not a problem, until eventually you realize that these things need to be determined by the public, not by somebody who was simply hired by the government.
Talk a little bit about how the American surveillance state actually functions. Does it target the actions of Americans?
NSA and the intelligence community in general is focused on getting intelligence wherever it can, by any means possible, that it believes on the grounds of sort of a self-certification that they serve the national interest. Originally, we saw that focus very narrowly tailored as foreign intelligence gathered overseas. Now, increasingly, we see that it's happening domestically. And to do that, the NSA specifically targets the communications of everyone. It ingests them by default. It collects them in its system, and it filters them, and it analyzes them, and it measures them, and it stores them for periods of time, simply because that's the easiest, most efficient, and most valuable way to achieve these ends. So while they may be intending to target someone associated with a foreign government or someone that they suspect of terrorism, they're collecting your communications to do so. Any analyst at any time can target anyone, any selector anywhere. Where those communications will be picked up depends on the range of the sensor networks and the authorities that that analyst is empowered with. Not all analysts have the ability to target everything, but I, sitting at my desk, certainly have the authorities to wiretap anyone, from you or your accountant to a federal judge to even the president if I had a personal email.
One of the extraordinary parts about this episode is that usually whistleblowers do what they do anonymously and take steps to remain anonymous for as long as they can, which they hope often is forever. You, on the other hand, have decided to do the opposite, which is to declare yourself openly as the person behind these disclosures. Why did you choose to do that?
I think that the public is owed an explanation of the motivations behind the people who make these disclosures that are outside of the democratic model. When you are subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy. And if you do that in secret consistently, you know, as the government does when it wants to benefit from a secret action that it took, it'll kind of give its officials a mandate to go, hey, you know, tell the press about this thing and that thing, so the public is on our side. But they rarely, if ever, do that when an abuse occurs. That falls to individual citizens, but they're typically maligned. You know, it becomes a thing of these people are against the country, they're against the government. But I'm not. I'm no different from anybody else. I don't have special skills. I'm just another guy who sits there day to day in the office, watches what's happening, and goes, this is something that's not our place to decide. The public needs to decide whether these programs and policies are right or wrong. And I'm willing to go on the record to defend the authenticity of them and say, I didn't change these. I didn't modify the story. This is the truth. This is what's happening. You should decide whether we need to be doing this.
Have you given thought to what it is that the U.S. government's response to your conduct is in terms of what they might say about you, how they might try to depict you, what they might try to do to you?
I could be, you know, rendered by the CIA. I could have people come after me or any of their third-party partners. You know, they work closely with a number of other nations. Or, you know, they could pay off the triads or, you know, any if they're agents or assets. We've got a CIA station just up the road in the consulate here in Hong Kong, and I'm sure they're going to be very busy for the next week. And that's a fear I'll live under for the rest of my life, however long that happens to be.
So, like, in his own words, what did he sound like to you? Was that guy a, you know, big spy? No, he did it. He told the truth. This is probably you. People who are listening, this makes the Pentagon Papers like small, which I'll explain that in a bit. This is probably one of the most profound openings, disclosures in front of us. It is this guy is, in my eye, is not just a messenger, but a hero. Because if you think about it, if somebody is in a war and he puts his life on the edge, he literally put his life on the edge. They can, he's right. The NSA now, or any agency, can even hire some agency or even triad gang or some whatever and just kill him, knock him off. His life now is in threats. He can suddenly disappear. How would you know about it? Why? What did he do? He told the truth. He disclosed. Here he was explaining what was going on with the leaks and how much information is and how it's being used and how the NSA became its own policing authority. It's choosing to decide who it can spy on and who it can't under its own apparatus. It made the Patriot Act became so morphed, so cuddled, it made it, it was purposely made to cuddle it. Now, why do you think people in the senators, like Feinstein, and both Republicans and Democrats alike, are so fearful of him coming out further? Because it's showing how our government, both in the administration, like Obama, and not including it goes back to Bush and so on, including our own senators and Congress and the whole apparatus, are aware of these things that are going on. And you, the public, are made a joke of. Now, this doesn't just apply to the United States. Those living in the UK, who do you think's the partner to it? Those living in Australia, Canada, the EU, the European Unions, most of the agencies across the spectrum around the world. And you think the Russia is any different? They're very much inclusive of it. They haven't let them out from Russia. That's a big question mark. I believe that this is like Snowden will go down in history as one of the most controversial, but most consequential whistleblowers, along with Daniel Ellsberg and Bradley Manning. Probably maybe even more so. I mean, he is responsible for handing over more material from one of the most powerful, secretive organizations ever, the National Security Agency. And Daniel Ellsberg was the one who I just briefly mentioned, was pretty famous because he was the guy, if people know history, who disclosed copies of the famous Pentagon Papers. And this is in 1971, he was charged with espionage. No different, exactly, almost like history repeating itself, as Snowden. And what did he disclose? If people reiterate what were the Pentagon Papers, they basically revealed that the United States had expanded its worth of bombing of Cambodia and Laos and, you know, the raids in North Vietnam and so on and so on, and that it also had revelations in the papers revealed that it was four generations from Truman to Johnson, including Kennedy, had basically just discarded, lied to the public. For example, the John F. Kennedy's administration had planned to overthrow South Vietnam's leader, Dinh Dinh, before his death in 1963 coup. And then President Johnson had decided to expand the war while promising we seek no wider war during his 1964 campaign, including bombing of North Vietnam. But we all know what happened in the Tolkien incident, where the CIA was caught red-handed, well, later caught red-handed, and actually bombed their own ship in Tolkien to basically expand our involvement in Vietnam. So I'm asking, is Snowden, in my eyes personally, is no villain. He's yet a hero. And, it's amazing how these things could be said about him. You know, I often wonder. I wanted to play a little brief. I know I'm on the bottom here of the show, but I think it's important to listen to Dan Ellsberg. He was being interviewed on CNN, and he discusses what his thoughts are about Snowden. And please listen.
Think of all of this.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm very impressed by what I've heard in the last couple of hours, including Snowden's own video here. I think he's done an enormous service, incalculable service. It can't be overestimated to this democracy. It gives us a chance, I think, from drawing back from the total surveillance state that we, I could say, are in process of becoming. I'm afraid we have become. That's what he's revealed. I really didn't expect that there was any chance of reversing that course toward what was called earlier total information awareness, total surveillance. I think if the public now is given authentic documents, official documents that Congress simply can't plausibly deny or plausibly claim ignorance of, maybe we will see hearings with genuine oversight that can rein in this extremely abusive surveillance program.
You've been waiting. First of all, you said you like what he has done, but he has broken the law.
Yes, you know, in this case, I would say he has clearly broken. I could even give you 18 U.S.C. 798, the Communications Intelligence Law. That is a clear-cut law, which, by the way, I support on the whole. Most of such communications intelligence deserves secrecy. I was cleared for that. I put none of that out. That's higher than top secret. I had the clearance for that, and I didn't put any out because this system that has just been disclosed did not exist then and could not exist, could not have existed. We just didn't have the physical digital capability for it. If I had known that the NSA, the National Security Agency, as I say, to which I had access, if I had known that they were spying on every American multiple times, different phone lines, bank data, credit cards, GPS, everything else. If I had known that, I would have done just what he's done. I would have broken that law as civil disobedience. And I must say...
So he was saying, yeah, he broke a law, but again, he did civil disobedience. So he did something that was prevalent. Now, of all people, if Obama had any balls, he would basically... pardon him, or you can see, have him, if he was a true person of standing, would immediately pardon him because he has that power and say, okay, you know what? We want you back, Snowden. We just want the papers, and we're going to have full disclosure of what's really going on. If President Obama was fully behind the American people, fully really emphasizing how a true democratic republic that we are. If he was really the president of the American people, he would do this. He would say, Snowden, I'm pardoning you. Just bring the papers back, and we're going to have disclosure right here. Boom. You're protected. I'm pardoning you in public. I'm going to stick you in the middle of the Congress and the Senate, and you can tell them to their face so every American can hear it. And have full disclosure, full hearings. That would be the thing to do, but they're not, are they? I guess we'll have to wait and see. You know, again, in my eyes, Snowden was no villain. To me, he was a hero, a brave one to do so. What he did to one of the most powerful agencies in the world. I think probably the only thing more powerful than them is, of course, the Federal Reserve. Yes, he is a great messenger. Ben Franklin once said that, and again I reiterate, they that they can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither safety nor liberty. So, I recognize that the Patriot Act and all its significance, though, is created with one purpose, not to make you secure, but to make them more secure. Them. Thomas Jefferson made a very unbelievable statement. He had said, "The democracy will cease to exist when you take away from those who are willing to work and give to those who would not." My reading of history convinces me that the most bad government results from too much government. I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the Americans from wasting the labors of the people on the pretense of taking care of them. The course of history shows that as government grows, liberty decreases. Now I want you to listen to what he says this in here. The two enemies of the people are the criminals and the government. This is what Thomas Jefferson said. The two enemies of the people are the criminals and the government. So let us tie down the second with the chains of the Constitution, so the second would not become the legalized version of the first. This applies not only to the United States of America, but this applies to everybody around what's standing in the world. Because them is us. We allowed them. We chose us. And I want to thank you all for listening in. Again, with that, thank you. God bless you all. And with all my words, we are all one, one universe, one conscious, all connected to one another, connected to God, connected to the universe. Thank you. And I'm going to close with a cool song by Korn called Blind, because let's not be blind to what's going on.